Well, Michael is going to start us off with a meditation, I think. And we also want to say, if you want to say something or ask Michael a question, come to the microphone so that we can hear you on the recording. And please listen to those recordings. They're just wonderful. I was able to go on and find Steve Jacobson because he's the one that talked about Michael last time he was here. So I listened to all of Steve Jacobson. They're wonderful recordings. I mean, you get more out of it when you listen again. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, thanks again, Judith. You make a very good school teacher. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to lead you, if you'd like this, through a meditation, through a guided meditation. And just to introduce this, first of all, this is a guided meditation that in some ways is very related to what I've just presented, the stories, the ideas, the idea of coming back to earth, the idea of letting go. It brings in mindfulness of breathing, very much focusing on the sensations of the breath. So it's very much a meditation designed to help us get into the flow. And it's a meditation that I have used quite a lot in my work as a physician. I've introduced it to other care workers, and we've used this in the setting of Serenity House, the hospice where I work. And I'll often introduce it, or we'll often introduce it to people as a relaxation meditation, which I hope you'll have that experience as you do it. And it is, if nothing else, I think it can be a great kind of way of deeply relaxing. But I think you'll see within it there's kind of deeper and deeper levels of letting go built into it. And also keeping in mind that process of, kind of disconnection and reconnection that was an underlying theme of a lot of what I shared with you. That it's not that we are separate from the rest of nature, it's just that we misperceive ourselves as separate from the rest of nature. We're totally part of nature. But we have this delusion of separateness, which we live with. So it's about coming back, remembering that connectedness. So I'd like to invite you to do this if you'd like to, and if you rather just sit it out, of course, that's absolutely fine too. So this will take about 20 minutes or so, and at the end of that time, hopefully we'll have some time if you would like to make comments or ask questions. I'm going to sit as I do this. So I'd like to start off by inviting you to make yourself comfortable and close your eyes. And allow your awareness to descend into your body. And allow it to continue to drop down through your body, down to the ground. So allow your awareness to drop to those sensations of contact between your feet and the ground. Those sensations of firmness and solidity. And with a quiet mind, with an attentive mind, simply be present within the body. As you allow your awareness to rise up and fill the whole space of your body, from the tips of your toes right up to the crown of your head, mindfully present throughout your body. And as you are, allow your body to relax. Set it at ease. Notice if there are any areas of tension, any areas of discomfort. Notice how you are around your shoulders, the base of your neck, muscles in your face. And attend to these areas as you breathe in. And as you breathe out, loosen, soften, let go. Soften the muscles of your face. Soften the eyes. Allowing your body to settle into a posture of ease, of comfort, of relaxation. And now, as you continue to breathe, as you continue in the rhythm of your breathing, I invite you to remember a place in nature, somewhere in the natural world, that's very special to you. Somewhere that you love to go, somewhere you love to be. A place where you feel safe. A place where you feel free to be yourself. And in your mind's eye, in your imagination, I invite you to imagine yourself arriving at this place. You're arriving now. And as you do, slow down. Look around. Take in the detail. Notice the quality of the light. The shadows, colors, any movement or other detail that catches your eye. Just noticing. You're here now. You've arrived in this place you love so much. This place you love to be in. And always in your mind's eye, I invite you to imagine closing your eyes and bringing all your attention and the focus of all your awareness to your hearing. As you tune in through your hearing to this place, noticing any sounds, noticing any gaps between the sounds. Noticing the kind of multi-layered texture of different sounds. Noticing the silence. Just receive the sounds. Notice. Drink them in. And when you're ready, once again in your mind's eye, imagine yourself opening your eyes and looking around and looking for a place where you could safely and comfortably sit down or perhaps even lie down if you want to. So now you are sitting or lying. You're in contact with the ground. And on either side you place the palms of your hand. So the palms of your hands are in contact with the ground of this place. And through the palms of your hand, just notice whatever there is to notice. Notice the temperature, texture, moistness, dryness. You may even want to move your fingers or your palms a little to get a better sense of the texture. And all the while your attention is just lightly focused on those sensations. as you continue to lie or to sit in contact with the ground of this place, notice the firmness and solidity of the ground itself. And know that the ground is holding you. This ancient ground is holding you. And with each exhale, let yourself go to the ground of this place. With each exhale, relax, relax deeply. With every out-breath, relax more and more deeply, surrendering your muscles to gravity. With every out-breath, simply release the breath effortlessly. The key is the out-breath. Utterly relax and continue to relax and let go all the way through the out-breath, still releasing and releasing more and continuing to relax and let go even beyond the end of the out-breath until the next breath flows in effortlessly, like a wave washing up on shore. With each exhale, continuing to let go, to let go, to let go, letting the body breathe. With each exhale, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting the body breathe. With each exhale, letting go, letting go, letting go, letting go. Letting the ground breathe. With each exhale, letting go, letting go, letting go. Letting the earth breathe. Letting the body breathe. Letting the earth breathe. Now I invite you to prepare to leave this place, knowing that you can return here whenever you want, knowing that this ancient ground is always there. Now gently bring your awareness back to the sensations of contact between your body and the chair. Between your feet and the ground. bring your awareness to the sounds around you in this place, in this room, at this time. And when you are ready, open your eyes. So I'd like to invite, as you return to the here and now, and just any thoughts, comments, observations, questions, I'd be happy to try to answer. Just happy to hear what your thoughts are. If you'd rather continue to meditate, that's okay.
I thought they were sending me a message. As most people know here, I'm not shy. But at the end of your presentation, which was exceptional, I thought I detected a potential or a series of words that potentially said that we have the capability of self-annihilation. And it took the wind out of my sails simply because I don't think it's possible. I don't think the power, which I believe has created us as the ultimate of creation, especially since the power considered it considered us important enough to, through the power of presence, came to us in the person of the name. I use those terms strictly because I don't want anybody to be upset. But that in the history of mankind, that has occurred. For such a thing to have occurred seems to say to me that we are the ultimate of the power's creation, through which the intention is to bring us to perfection. Could you address that, Mick? Determination, or am I crazy as a hoot owl? Which is quite possible.
I don't think you're crazy as a hoot owl, but, well... Let me see what I can say, and I'd love others to join in, please, if you feel moved to do so in response to Peter's question or comments. I think you're referring to the Albert Schweitzer quote that where he talks about kind of realizing what the kingdom of heaven means is a matter of survival for our world. And yeah, I think I included that because I agree with his comments that, you know, I've become increasingly mindful in recent years, kind of looking beyond the bedside in my kind of work with people who are seriously ill. I've just started to notice more how much serious illness there is in our world in terms of our environment and our climate, and that if I'm, you know, if I look at that medically, as you know, as a doctor, how if I see somebody as a patient, you know, when I'm called in the hospital, I'm called in to somebody who's in pain, for example, or somebody who's very short of breath, or somebody, you know, has difficult symptoms. The first thing I'll always do in my specialty in palliative care is make a diagnosis of the cause of the symptom. And so, you know, somebody's got a pain in their abdomen, it could be, I know that they've got bowel cancer, for example. It could be coming maybe from the tumor in the bowel, or it could be coming because it's spread to the liver. And if I can understand exactly which one of those it is, it calls for maybe a very different treatment approach. So in a similar way, if I kind of look at some of the malaise that I see happening in our world and in our climate, it seems to me that if I trace that back, it looks that part of the diagnosis is that we perceive ourselves as separate from nature, that we no longer perceive ourselves as part of nature, that we somehow feel that there's nature and there's us, and that we're somehow superior to nature. So I see you shaking your head. I mean, maybe we've got maybe a different view on that, but you know, and that's why I find so much resonance in the Native American view, that we are not separate from nature, that we're all relations, that we're all...
Pinnacle.
Pardon?
The pinnacle of nature.
Personally, that's not my... You know, that's... You know, and I respect that viewpoint, but that isn't my viewpoint. And I can't help thinking that part of the problems in our world may have come from thinking that way, and thinking that the world is here for our use and benefit, you know, and which maybe that doesn't go with that view of maybe, you know, and I know that I've heard other folks articulating that view who really have a sense of the importance of being good stewards and looking after creation. And I really, I respect that view. But I think it's a different view to see that we're not special. We have a very special part to play. And the amazing thing is we've got this capacity to self-reflect and to choose, which does make us, I think, very distinct and different. Judith mentioned earlier that she just participated in this program that my wife and I offered at La Casa de Maria called May All Beings Be Happy, and we co-led that with a climate scientist, Catherine Gauthier, who from UCSB. And Catherine talked to us about climate change, but she also talked to us about Gaia, about the fact that this theory that the Earth is a living system that knows how to self-regulate. And this living system, given time, will self-regulate the current crisis. But the point is that that Gaia regulates and operates in geological time, which may be hundreds of thousands, if not millions of years. And whether complex life forms, including humans, will survive during that time is certainly being questioned by a lot of folks who are kind of looking at this and trying to understand it. But as she was sharing that, I just had an insight, and that insight was, you know, if what the Buddha is teaching us and what our Native American wisdom teachers are teaching us, and these old stories that I quoted, if it's true that we are all connected, that everything is connected, that we and our world are not separate, that's not to say that we don't have our distinct existence, but that we're radically interconnected. You know, we're made of the earth, literally. But that means that we are also Gaia. We're not separated from Gaia. We are an aspect of Gaia. But the difference is that unlike the kind of rest of Gaia, which has to operate in geological time, our human capacity allows us to react really quickly. So we have the capacity to choose, to make decisions, to make a difference. And just the phrase that came to me as with that was, you know, that we are Gaia's rapid response team.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that's a response. Thank you for your very interesting comments and questions.
Hi, just a couple of quick thoughts on that subject. There is a book that's out now that's called something like The Sixth Extinction. And it talks about the fact that there have been 5 mass extinctions already. I think that is enough to give us a certain pause about this whole issue of survival. The other thing that is troubling, I think, to those of us who are identifying with the Judeo-Christian tradition goes all the way back to our creation myth in Genesis about God giving Adam dominion over all the birds of the air and the animals on the land. And it's almost as if to say you have permission to run rampant over these creatures in that tradition. And I don't think that's particularly helpful. I rather like some of the stories you gave us better.
Yeah, and I know, Tom, that there are many from within the kind of Christian story and tradition, you know, talking about a very different take on things other than that kind of story of dominion.
I don't have a question. I just have an observation. But first, I wanted to say my own reflection on dominion is I'm sure it has the same root as domicile. And so I always figured, I figure now anyway, that dominion is more like, you know, the father or the mother of the home, and one would not rape or ravage or abuse the members of their family. Mm. But my observation was that this was a lovely meditation, and afterwards I'm sitting here still and I'm seeing everyone has an aura.
Thank you.
Peter again. You didn't think I was going to let that get by without saying something, but My intention was not to say that us as being the pinnacle, that we were kind of a pimple and that needed to be dealt with, but to say that the magnificence of the power of God is such that over the course of history, He can bring about from the history that we are aware of mankind, the era of the caveman, all the way up through our unfortunate situation today and beyond, to the ultimate awareness of the fact that we are heaven on earth. Thomas Merton said, little sons walking around among each other. But the thought also came to me that over the course of history that we are aware of, with any, there have been isolated sparks, as in the Teresas of Avila, the John of the Cross, Buddha, and the individuals who have come to the conclusion that there's more than what we immediately see in front of us. Today, I would say, somewhat yourself, Richard Rohr, others like you, but we're doing it less as an individual and more as larger and larger groups of people who are coming to the realization of responsibility and compassion. And if compassion became the norm, then the potential will dissipate just totally.
Yeah.
And it may start small. And in the process, we may narrow down the count of the number of us that are so destructive. It looks like China's interested in that, and Russia. But as it stands, I see the movement towards, as a verification, that God didn't make a mistake, or He isn't going through the sixth annihilation sort of thing.
Thank you, Peter. Let's just take John.
Just a comment, an impact it had on me, and I was thinking about it, and it sort of cinched it for me when we had our breathing exercise and our contemplative moment before the second session. I really take a similarity to yoga, if I can, what you've been talking about. And normally we start off a yoga session at a group doing the same thing, starting to breathe, starting to relax, think about nature, connectivity, get thoughts out of our mind about everyday issues. And during the exercise, which is called flow yoga, you're not only doing body movement, but you have to breathe at the same time. Otherwise, you just don't get the benefit of the exercise. So you have both an external as well as an internal commonality with those in your group, connecting your inside, your outside. Mm-hmm. And then you finish the session off with a connectivity with nature and spend the day. And sort of that carries over a bit for me, that if you can get that type of experience in a group by internal and external movement together, that when you get it with a group outside of the class, if you have patience and you listen, perhaps there's a commonality that you can get with them as well, whether it be our own neighbors or foreign countries or whatever. Just take the time to give people a chance, see how you are reflective together and how you are common to the others around you.
So. Thank you, John. That's beautiful. And I think, at the break, one or two folks came up and shared some thoughts and, you know, just talked about how these sort of pockets of emergence are happening around exactly what you're describing. And actually, just one thing, and I realize we're out of time, but just in closing, just to share with you is that I shared about the work of John Young and his backyard bird language, and he's got a group called Eight Shields Institute, which, you know, they have their own program and website and that. But the two things that they teach together are, on the one hand, deep nature connection, and at the same time, the importance of community and the importance of creating communities of support. And I mean, clearly that's what you've got here, which is extraordinary, you know, really to have this. But that's what I hear you describing as well, John. You know, you have the experience in the moment, but you also have the kind of community of your group, and then kind of bringing it out, you know, into family units and bringing it out to friends, and then hopefully bringing it out. But that we really, in a way, if we're kind of cultivating this kind of view of deep connection and deep compassion, that it's not enough for us just to be doing that as part of an individual journey. We really need communities to reflect back that and support us in it, because it's not the value of the dominant culture, you know, far from it. So thank you very much.